Welcome back to another episode of the Art of Healing podcast. If you are not yet part of the Art of Healing community and this is your first time tuning in, I want to say welcome. And if you are part of the community and you keep coming back, I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Elise and I just the other day were talking about how really grateful we are for you, our audience and our community that is just behind what we do and behind themselves, really, like just supporting your own self, your own mental health and your relationships by coming and tuning into the things that we're bringing to you. And so thank you so much. In being here, you're supporting yourself. You're supporting my family and our business. And it's just a huge, huge blessing to have you here. And so I wanted to start off this podcast episode with just a big thank you. And especially because this episode is a little bit different. It's a unique episode where I actually involved the community a bit more. And maybe you were part of this where I did a Instagram live video for this particular episode and we saved the recording and now we're posting it here on the podcast. Because it was originally recorded on Instagram live, the audio isn't quite as like clean and crisp. We're trying to figure out what we might do in the future to be able to still do Instagram live and record at the same time because it's so cool and the conversations are so good. We want to repost them to the podcast. So bear with us. The audio is a little less, crisp as it normally is. However, this was probably one of, I know I say this all the time. I know but it's true. This is one of my absolute favorite episodes that I've ever done. It was super good. I'm talking with Ricky Close. And if you know her, she's on Instagram as the Anxious Heart Guide. We've had a previous episode with her. Every time I have a conversation with her, it just seems to go super well. And we talk about all sorts of stuff like understanding defensiveness in relationships, like how to respond to defensiveness when somebody else is defensive, how to respond when your own defensiveness is coming up to the surface. We talk a lot about working with avoidant partners, those who are emotionally avoidant. Maybe they pull away, maybe they shut down, that kind of stuff, and a whole lot more. And it was really cool. Ricky actually allowed me to let her kind of get vulnerable. I asked her some questions and we get a little bit deep and it was pretty raw, pretty real. And so I'm super excited for you to tune into this one because I think you'll see how a lot of the theories that I teach and I help instruct you in start to come to fruition in real life. And it is so, so amazing. Also, before we jump in, speaking of anxious hearts, being that we're talking with Ricky, the Anxious Heart Guide, if you feel like you have an anxious heart in dating and in relationships in general, where you maybe feel a bit more clingy, or maybe you feel like you're a people pleaser and you don't have boundaries and you kind of let people walk all over you, or you get really, really anxious if, a person isn't texting you back, or if, your husband's gone too long, or your wife isn't as responsive as you'd like, and you feel a lot of that anxious attachment. You feel like you kind of identify with the anxious attachment. I have a waiting list open right now for the Anxious Lovers Club. And the Anxious Lovers Club is going to be the coolest thing that I've yet to produce. It is going to be a mix of live calls where I'm going to be doing some guided work with you guys, where we're actually getting in, doing some work, experiencing new things through some guided visualizations, through some journal prompts, through some thought work, some real deep work around healing and soothing that anxious part of you. Because really that anxious part comes from wounds. And so addressing those wounded parts of you, reframing the way those wounded parts change your thoughts, and addressing the underlying emotions is what we're going to be doing. So it's live calls mixed with some kind of self-guided material in between the live calls. And it's going to be, speaking of community again, it's going to be an amazing community of people who are really there just to support themselves and support each other in healing this anxious attachment. So if you haven't signed up for the waitlist yet, I encourage you to use the link here in the podcast description or go to my Instagram, TikTok, wherever you find me. The link in my bio will have a link to the Anxious Lovers Club. It probably won't be launching until about June or July of this year, 2023, just because there's so much that's going into it and there's so much going on in my life currently that I want to make sure that it is phenomenal and I give you the best attention that I possibly can with the best resources. I'm consulting with some of what I consider the world's best therapists when it comes to attachment therapists, those who are really trained, highly trained in understanding an individual's attachment, how they see the world, and how to heal from anxious and insecure attachments. So if that sounds good to you, go grab that waiting list right now. Pause the podcast so you don't forget. Jump on the waiting list for the Anxious Lovers Club, and I will see you in there. Okay, now let's turn to our actual interview with Ricky. Thank you again so much for joining me here on the Art of Healing podcast. And in the future, I'm going to do some more of these podcasts on Instagram Live, so you can jump on and ask questions live, and we get to kind of interface a little bit, and that's always way fun. So please jump on those lives, because they're going to be so valuable. I'm bringing some of the most amazing guests. I have some really exciting guests coming up. I can't yet tell you who they are, but they're really, really exciting, and a lot of you are going to recognize these people as they tune in. So, okay, let's jump into the interview. Thanks, guys, for jumping on here and joining us. Hopefully this is going to be a really powerful and fun conversation to be had. So, Ricky, I'm curious for those, so we kind of have a mix of people tuning in today. Some people may not know me, and some people may not know you. Just give us a brief introduction. Who is the Anxious Heart Guide? What do you do?
Yeah.
And what are you all about?
Well, let's see. Now I'm on the spot. I'm Ricky Close. I am the author of The Anxious Heart's Guide. Honestly, I'm just a fellow traveler who's trying to figure this stuff out. But I'm also a voracious reader. So my journey started the year that I decided to read 60 books on relationships. That was immediately following my divorce. And I had so much improvement and happiness from that. I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be cool if somebody like summed up what worked and what was making me feel better? And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm a writer. That person should be me. So The Anxious Hearts Guide was born on Instagram. I'm on TikTok now too, just lightly, but I write every day about the things that I find that help out with anxious attachment, which was the thing that I determined was the main cause of my divorce and my lifetime of relationship stress.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've heard your story a bit, and every time I love it. It's so fun to hear kind of the personal journey that people go through to get to where they are and what they're doing. I recently did a podcast episode where I got super real to the point where I was like, man, I'm kind of vulnerable. Yeah, like really talked about everything from, you know, my own anxious attachment to coping through all sorts of things, like chasing people, even, you know, chasing fulfillment in ways that wasn't healthy for me, such as addiction and other things like that. And it's, I think there's power in these stories that we live that lead us through a lot of the lessons that we learn.
Yeah.
And so I'm always grateful to kind of tune into your story a little bit and hear about that.
Well, thank you. I heard a great quote a while back that was like, you are best suited to serve the person you once were. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I think the creators that I meet here, like you, are on similar missions. So we've been through some stuff, and we don't want other people to have it as rough as we did.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also just so exciting when you start finding these answers to what you're going through. And not to say everybody's answer is going to be the exact same. We're all
universal. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Sure. But I mean, relatively, we're all wired pretty similarly.
Yeah.
And these answers are fairly universal to an extent. And it's so exciting when you find something and you just want to implant it into somebody's heart. You know, I was thinking about this week as when I was working with one of my clients, sometimes as like an intervention that I'll use is just kind of I model like healthy thinking, like acting almost as if I'm them. And I sit back and I'm like, oh yeah, like, maybe this would happen. And I guess I'll be okay. And they'll like hear me speak as if I'm them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa. What would it be like if I thought like that? And then that's kind of my hope sometimes. I just like, take this energy of just, it's going to be good. It's okay. And I just want to see if I can implant some of these ideas and these feelings into you. And so that's what I think we're trying to do out here is help people feel that way.
I think it works too. If it makes you feel any better, sometimes I still hear my old therapist's voice in my head when I have a really tough problem. I'm like, what would he do? What would he say in this situation? And then I can hear his calm voice and I'm like, all right, that's what I'm going to do. So it works.
It's so funny how like therapists kind of become part of like their clients' lives outside of the therapy room so much. And it's so odd to me sometimes because people come back and like, yeah, I was talking to my husband about, you and like, we talk about and they just use your name, Trevor was saying this and I've never met any of these people and it's always like, oh, that's kind of funny. But I think it's an important thing to remember as like, people like you and I, as we help people that we carry a lot of weight into these people's lives. You guys tune into us and we appreciate that so much. But it also is like a big responsibility that we want to take super
Ooh,
serious.
it's huge. It's huge. And that's why I like these longer format things that we can do because you can only put so much nuance in one little post, you know? One little post and story doesn't apply to everyone, but we can say a lot more on lives and broadcasts like this. So it's nice to be able to do that.
We can do so much more. I always think that the there's always kind of that hesitation where I'm like posting something, a little video, and there's so much in the back of my head that's like, yeah, but that's usually where I'm like called out in the comments, and people are like, yeah, but that wouldn't work in an abusive relationship or something. You're like,
Oh,
yeah, okay,
yeah.
I got that, I got that. But
Yeah,
it's
that's
true. The
tough.
nuance is hard to, approach and say like, hey, I know this isn't everything. Obviously, people's lives are complex. And even as we're looking at some of these questions that we're about to get to, there's so much nuance and so much story behind these that I'm sure we don't know. So we're going to
Absolutely.
kind of do our best to answer some of the questions that have rolled in through Instagram stories. If you submitted some today, hopefully we'll touch on yours or at least something that relates to yours, as a lot of them overlap. And we'll kind of roll in that direction. How's that sound?
And I'd like to add too that anybody listening today, take what will work for you. Take what feels good. You know, if you hear something and you're like, oh, I don't know that that would really work for me or that doesn't really apply to me, leave it, you know. Take what works and leave what doesn't.
The only thing I would add to that is wrestle with that resistance for a minute too.
Oh, but sure. Yeah, it shouldn't be too easy, but definitely.
I love it. I love it. Well, Ricky, I'm curious, as you looked over our questions, I want to do things that you feel like are kind of, speaking to you or in your wheelhouse a little bit more to get going.
Let's see. I think, okay, I saw this one. We're probably not going to say the names of the people who submitted the questions. So here's a question that I saw that really stuck out. It says, what do you do when the person you're communicating with is stuck in defensive mode? And I liked that question because of Gottman's Four Horsemen. Defensiveness is my horseman.
Is
That's
it?
like the horseman that I struggle with the most. So I was actually hoping that you might tackle that one a little bit.
Okay, well, I'll
What can a
dig.
very defensive partner do?
Yeah, so meaning
Or
if our partner
actually,
is defensive or if we're defensive.
let me interject here. The person asking this question has a defensive partner. So what could they do in the presence of a very defensive partner? And I'm like, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that because I am kind of a defensive partner on occasion.
Okay, maybe we'll try it on like this. I'll kind of ask you some questions to if you're feeling like you're the defensive type of person a bit more,
Oh,
then maybe
great.
we can kind of get curious with you about what that's
Okay.
like. Because
I'll
I
be the
think,
guinea pig.
yeah, the first thing that I think of when I think of if my partner's doing something and I don't like it and it's bugging me, it's hard for me to approach that. It triggers me, it sends me into my protection, whether that's defensiveness or criticism or whatnot. It's stirring something up in me. I go, get curious. Like, because the only thing you can do is probably get close to it and understand it. You want to run from it. You want to get away from it or just tell them that they got to stop doing it. But usually running or telling them they just got to stop doesn't work. And so I say, let's get curious. And so I'm along those lines. Ricky, I'm curious for you, what brings up defensiveness? Like, what's happening around you? What are you noticing? Those little signs that say, oh my goodness, it's coming up in me.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, this is a good place to go with that. All right. I feel defensiveness the most when my partner has something, it's something that I've done that really bothers him. I'm a little bit lazy with housework, so that one comes up a lot. And I'll use that as an example. Let's say the dishes are starting to pile up a little bit, and they're my dishes, not necessarily the group ones, but they're Ricky's 1,000 cups that are starting to stack up in the sink. And the moment he approaches me with that and he says something, it can be something really innocuous, like, hey, I'd like to talk to you about the dishes. And then everything in my being is like, here it comes, right? Like I'm about to get chastised. I'm about to be seen as someone who is not a good partner. It's the threat. Yeah. And the threat of abandonment comes up really sharply right in that moment. I have the feeling like if I'm seen as someone who can't get better at this, I'm going to be abandoned eventually. And so I immediately fly into like, okay, think up some reasons why this was okay. Think up some reasons why you're not to blame for this.
Yeah.
And needless to say, that conversation does not go well. I mean, it's already down like a really terrible path.
Well, no, I appreciate this because you're letting, you know, your audience, my audience, be in answering this question, be really real and really vulnerable in like saying it, because this is really cool stuff, because this is the real, what I call kind of the juice, like the actual stuff that happens in relationships. And so I'm hearing when that question comes up about the dishes or about the housework, hey, what's going on with these dishes? Immediately the protection comes up. The protection is the defensiveness. I'm a protector. Yeah. I'm going to go on my PR campaign.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden I need to somehow prove that I'm good enough to stay with. Like, this isn't a big enough threat for you to leave me. Let me show you that I'm enough to be here with you. And you know what? That's such a common story for defensiveness. Yeah. My goodness. It's so classic. It's a PR campaign that just says, wait, hold on. I'm enough. I'm enough for you. And I need to prove it. I need to show you that I'm acceptable, I'm lovable. And I think you kind of led into what we hear is kind of the start of like that negative cycle between partners. They hear the defensiveness, and then you say it doesn't lead to good places from there.
Nope,
tell me,
nope.
What do you mean?
Well, I know from my reading, see, is this fair? Because I know from my reading,
I love it.
That it immediately invalidates my poor partner, who's just bringing up a very legitimate concern, because neither of us really want dishes to be piling up. But for me to launch immediately into defensiveness, I know that he feels like she doesn't care about my very legitimate concern.
Totally.
And in that moment, I don't care about his legitimate concern. The only thing, and I hate to say that, but the only thing that I care about when I'm feeling defensive is defending myself, is making sure that he doesn't see me negatively.
That's so true. That's so true. And you know, it makes a lot of sense though. And I think all of us have been there. I get in that place for sure, where it's like, whoa, I'm getting defensive. And all of a sudden I got to convince everybody else around me that I'm lovable. And it's like, hold on. I remember doing this the other day. I was with a couple and I just was like, hey, hold on. Cause somebody was getting defensive, and I go, you know what? She already knows that you're enough and that you're lovable. You don't need to convince her.
Oh, that's beautiful.
She really doesn't need to know that. Like,
Trevor,
all she
do you
needs...
just want to come over and say that when when this starts happening in my relationship?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, he already knows, you know, that you're lovable. If you're the person who's defensive, you know what? Like, they already know that you're enough. And that's the reason why they're asking for you to do something anyway. They want to keep you around. It's not like they're trying to kick you out. They're saying, hey, this doesn't quite work, but I want you to work in my life with me. And so can I have something different here? Because I want to keep you close. Yeah. And this is something that means a lot to me.
I like that. I know my sister calls me sometimes and we talk about this, because her husband is also very defensive. He's not watching, but hi, Shane, in case he is.
just gets called out.
I know. But he and I, we're both very defensive. So my sister and I like to talk about this because we're on the opposite sides of this, right? Her spouse is the defensive one. I'm the defensive one.
Yeah.
So she'll call me and she'll say, what can I do to ask him about, let's just say, dishes again, and not put him on the defensive. And I told her just the other day that it really helps me when my partner comes in, and instead of saying like, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about the dishes," he leads with, "I've got something that we can work on together." And immediately I'm like, "Well, I can do that, right?" The people pleasing kicks in, and I'm like, "Yes, I'm part of this team." And then we brainstorm ideas on ways that we can both work on making the dishes an easier task. Maybe there's something about it that's holding me back from being as regular with the dishes as he would like, you know? The teamwork aspect is really helpful because then it doesn't feel like him versus me. It's kind of like us working on a problem together.
There's no need for defense if you're on the same team.
Exactly.
Like you think about even like the sports analogy there, whether you're a sports person or not, it's clear that you don't defend against your teammates really in any sport. Somebody who knows a lot about sports is probably gonna be like, well, there's a random weird sport in like India you do. Well, okay, I don't know about that, but for the most part, you're never going to defend against the people who are there with you on your team. You know, you're pointing towards the same goal, the same basket, and that totally changes things when you feel like that person is on your team and they care so much about you.
Yeah, and hearing it that way, like, "Hey, teammate, we've got something to tackle. I don't feel like I'm in danger of being abandoned." Like that defensiveness doesn't even have a chance to arise when he approaches things that way. So.
It just reassures. I call them the kind of the attachment messages, either positive or negative. They're either reassuring of the attachment or kind of dismissing and destructive. And we can interpret almost anything as one of the two. And they usually sound like, I love you. You're important to me. You're on my team. I want you close. Stay with me. I'm not going anywhere.
That's
Or,
soothing just hearing you say right now.
Or, hey, I'm out of here. You're not enough. This isn't gonna work. I'm gonna leave. Like all those things, and it's so crazy because when we start hearing the second ones, those negative ones, that's when our protectors come up. We try to protect ourselves or the relationship through that defensive stuff. We turn on that PR campaign, or we get critical, or we just run if we're the more avoidant time. And
Totally.
yeah.
Yeah, well put. I like that.
Yeah, that was
Did
a
you
fun one.
I think we covered it well.
I
So
think
maybe
so.
I'll flip it around to you. Was there a question that stood out to you that you really liked?
So there was a lot of questions. It felt like kind of along the themes of engaging an avoidant partner. Avoidant partner avoids. How do I do, anything when they're avoiding? There's just like so many in that category that I saw come up. And the thing that's kind of jumping out to me is it seems like people are seeking for some sort of understanding of the avoidant type and what to do in a relationship when one partner is more avoidant. And that's maybe a broad way to jump in, but
I think a lot of people are probably nodding and excited for us to tackle that, though.
I'm
Especially if
curious.
they're here from my page.
Yeah, for sure, because they're probably on the anxious side, right? If they're from your page. And that
And the
makes a lot of
chances are
sense.
good that they're with an avoidant because the two do tend to attract each other.
Definitely attract each other. We could even talk about why if we wanted. But I'm curious, what comes to mind first when if somebody walks up to you and says, Ricky, I need some help. I've got this avoidant partner. I don't even know if they love me. They're bailing on me all the time, just kind of like pulling back. And I don't know what to do. I get so frustrated. What's kind of some of the first instincts or things you maybe questions you would ask them or things that you would bring to the surface right off the bat?
Well, very first off, I would like to know how far into this relationship are you, right? My answer is going to be very different for somebody who's only been seeing someone a week or two than it is for somebody who's been with this person for 4 years. So if you've only been seeing someone for a week or two and their distance is feeling unbearable and they're not being communicative, I hate to use the word run, but I might say you might want to consider whether or not this person's going to be a good candidate for pursuing a relationship with, in something with very low stakes and very low commitment already. It might be a good idea to just look critically at what items you're using to select a partner. I know that a lot of the folks on my page are either single or in like brand new relationships with people who aren't feeling like they're very safe or good for them. And so I would find that out. Now, the other side are people who've been with these people for a year or 2 years or 10 years. They know that they love this person. They know that this person has a lot of awesome qualities. They know that this person has a lot of struggles, but they also have positive qualities that they've decided they want to be with, and they've decided to stick around. So in that case, step one, this was tough for me too, is to accept the fact that we can't force somebody to come closer. And I think that's a really good place to start, because a lot of the questions I get are, how can I make my avoidant partner talk to me? How can I make them come close when they're trying to run away? And that's uncomfortable to hear, but truly our impulse to force them to come sit with us when they're off trying to find safety, trying to clear their head, is not a good one. So
It's the very thing that probably pushes them away,
it is
which
indeed.
so hard to swallow.
I
It's like, wait, are you saying I'm responsible? And it's like, well, no, but you're part of a system, and the
Exactly.
system is responsible for that. And yeah, I think that's a huge thing to think about, is like, what's my role in this? And
Yeah. I
what
also
energy
try to
am I carrying? Go ahead.
I also try to inject a little empathy in. As anxious folks, you may be more likely to need a little bit more closeness. And if that's okay, and if that's valid, then it's okay and it's valid that you might be with somebody who needs a little bit more space and distance in order to process. So that's something that you might have to accept about them if there's someone that you've chosen to be with. And that's kind of a tough one too. That's part of loving somebody where they're at and for who they really are. They might just need a little bit more space when things get tough to process.
You know, it's interesting, 'cause even when I'm so oftentimes I'll sit with a couple and one is the more anxious type and one is the more avoidant type. Almost every time. Pretty rarely is it different than that. It can be. But and it's usually women who are a little bit more on the anxious side and men are on the avoidant side. It
Typically, yeah.
kind of makes sense. Even culturally, I think men are kind of brought up to be a bit more anxious, or sorry, avoidant. But
Avoidant,
anyway,
yeah.
even as you say that, kind of how you approach both individuals is going to be so different.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, if I try to get like deep in there and I try to, pull out the emotion so that I can work with it with the avoidant type right off the bat, I'm probably going to get that shut down a little bit too.
Resistance.
Yeah, I'm going
Yeah.
to get that, and I know that. So I'll even change my posture. I it's the I'm getting shiz done posture is what I say it, where I kind of like kick back. I don't know, you can't see it right now, but I'll kind of kick back. I'll put my arms back. If I have a drink, like a, I don't know, something from lunch, I'm like, yeah, man, like, okay. And I just ease off the pressure, because I know
Yeah.
that it's just going to be so much. And then when they do give me something, I'm just so grateful, and I'm right
Yeah.
there with them, because it's hard. They've never done this a lot of times. And I think it's really hard too, because in a relationship, and I'm trying to inject a bunch of empathy for the avoidant type, because so often when I shoot a video on social media or do a post where I'm trying to build some of that empathy, I see all the claws come out
Oh,
from
I know. It just
the
breaks my heart.
oh
There's so much
yeah
anger. There's so
yeah
much anger from
so
the
much
avoidant folks. And I understand that anger. I mean, I felt that intimately for a really long time. So I get where they're coming from. But if it's okay for us to be anxious, it's okay for other people to be avoidant too. And if it's someone you want to be with, you got to learn how to work with that. I love that you're modeling for the anxious partner in therapy how to approach that. Just being able to sit back and give them a little bit more physical space is very comforting for folks of the avoidant type.
Absolutely. And it's I think you see that cycle perpetuate because the anger, like you said, makes so much sense. When that person is pulling away, you see the, like the back of their head, like these images are probably so familiar to some people listening, where it's like, oh my gosh, this wall, how can I get through this wall? This is so hard. Of course, that's so frustrating, and I get that. But what's hard is that when that frustration and that anger leads to the you never do it right, you're leaving, you're doing it wrong, just all the kind of the critical blaming energy, oh, you just send them further back. Because most of the time they're thinking things like this. I uncover avoidant like thoughts and emotions every day. And this is the narrative that I hear. I don't know what to do. I feel stuck. I feel like I can't say the right thing. I freaking love this person so much, and it hurts. And I get into this place of despair where I get confused and I don't know what to do. And so I just shut down because I don't want to make it worse. It's
I
like
love that.
if our relationship were a big rope and it was unraveling on one end, I'm way more concerned about the end that's still good. I just want to keep it that way. I don't want to go down there on that unraveling end. And
I hear
the
that.
anxious is like, no, we got to put this thing
We got
back
to tie
together.
it up. Yeah, exactly. It was my own partner, really wonderful thing that he told me. He actually said, sometimes when I'm being quiet, it's because I feel like if I open my mouth, it'll make it worse. And that was to be able to hear that, I was like, ah, why couldn't you have just told me that in the beginning? Like that's something that can be really comforting to anxious partners sometimes, I think. Sometimes we have the tendency to think that our partner is being silent to hurt us. But sometimes they're really trying to do damage control, because they care about us so much.
So often that's the case, but it's hard for them to even A, find that emotion in a place where they can locate it, understand that, like, okay, I'm feeling afraid, I'm protecting either you or the relationship, and then to vocalize it. It's like they've never done that in their
No,
lives.
this was years of work that my partner had done before he could finally say something like this. But for the folks here who are with somebody who they suspect is avoidant, that could be going on even if they don't realize it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of circling back to that curiosity stance that we were talking about, I think this is a similar principle. You know, I tell people, I'm like, if you forget every relationship advice and all that, like three guiding principles I think help my couples be successful and help me even in my work to be successful with them is slow down. It's just like get your body calm, get present, get curious. And then be compassionate. Like, what can I know about this person? Instead of thinking about how terrible they are because they're avoiding me, I just want to know what's going on under the surface. And when I find what's under the surface, can I be really compassionate about that? Or even just have compassionate assumptions that, wow, maybe my partner feels this way. Maybe they're not in a position to tell you yet, or they don't have the emotional awareness yet to even say it. If you walk away from this with that thought in your mind, maybe you'll give them the space they need to engage a little bit more. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that's great. That's great. I love too how let's see. Give me those three bullet points again, 'cause I know some people can't write fast enough.
You're
Those are wonderful.
good. So slow down, get curious, like what's going on here? How's it going? And it's kind of the more casual tone, right? And like not the, I'm really
Not
curious.
what's going on, right?
What the hell is wrong with you? It's the get curious and then have compassion. Like, oh wow, once I find stuff in my curiosity, because you're probably gonna find stuff either about them or about you. And when you find it, it's like, can I hold it and be a little bit loving about it? Even if it's like not helpful, I can at least, or like what they're doing isn't helpful for the situation, I can at least understand maybe why they're doing it and have
Totally.
passion for that.
My favorite of those is the second one, getting curious, because I used to get in a lot of hot water by trying to mind read, especially when I was doing all this research on avoidant attachment. And I used to think, well, I read about this. I know exactly what he's thinking. And many times when I straight up asked him, I was wrong. So that's why I love that curiosity, Sometimes we think we know why our partner says and does things, and we're dead wrong.
Yeah, you can be super wrong, and it's hard. And here's, and I think a piece of hopefulness to plug in here as well is that if this dynamic has been going on for a very, very long time, it is going to be hard for both the more pursuant, anxious type and the avoidant type to trust that there can be something different.
Boy, don't I know that. Yes, that's true. It's really
Tell me about that. When you say, "Boy, I know that," tell me
Yeah, well,
your
that
experience.
was my marriage, right? I learned about this stuff at the end of my marriage as it was kind of crumbling, and learning about these patterns, there wasn't a lot of hope in the messages that I was reading. So I thought when I was reading it, well, I'm this way and he's this way, and that's just how we are, and it's not going to work. And I wish that the messages that I read had more hope and more tools and tips on how to get out of it, because it's absolutely possible to find your way out of the anxious avoidant trap.
Yeah, it absolutely is possible. And you know, I think one of the challenges that makes it hard, what we're talking about, is that trust enough to do the thing that's different? Maybe you kind of figure it out. You're like, okay, being super critical and like blaming is not working. What does work is maybe slowing down, getting curious, being compassionate. What Drake and Trevor were talking about, I can do that. You know what that looks like. But to do that, it takes vulnerability. And that vulnerability is, I think we use that word so much that we forget that its actual definition, meaning I am open to being hurt when I am vulnerable.
Oh, and that's so hard to do. It's so important. My sister, I'm going to mention my family a lot because I lean on them for a lot
I
of
love
support. But
that.
yeah, whenever I get into any kind of tiff with my partner, sometimes I'll call her and I'll explain the argument, and she'll say, "You know what, Ricky? Sometimes you've got to take the first step." And that's not easy to do, because you're like, what if he keeps doing this behavior that bothers me? But she's like, "Sometimes you've got to take the first step and stick your neck out first and say, I love you, and we're going to solve this together, even if you think that he's not going to respond well." That's if you recognize that you're in circling the drain and the pattern, the negative spiral's begun. Sometimes we have to be the first one to try to step outside of it, even if we're afraid that our partner's not going to follow us into a more positive place.
And you know, so it's speaking of that, when you said that, it reminds me sometimes, so in the work that I do, I'll find those little vulnerable things, I'll let them voice them to me, and then I'll have them pass them to the other one.
Oh, I
Because
like
it's a
that.
lot easier to tell me that, like, I'm so afraid to, you know, lose him. And when he avoids me, I just crumble inside. Or I'm afraid to lose her and I don't know what to do to fix this. And I'll tell me, and I'm like, wow, what would it be like to pass it to them? And sometimes they go, I can't do that. I can't do that.
Wow, is
I'm
that
so
even
afraid.
when with them sitting
Even
there?
them sitting there. Yeah, they'll be right there. They'll be hearing it. And they say, I don't dare look at them and say it. I can't do it because there's so much hurt. And then this is where it kind of gets cool. I go, okay, if you can't do that, tell me about the fear about doing that. And I'll say, I'm so afraid. She means so much to me. It's so hard because I've been hurt before and I don't know what to do here. And I say, what would it be like just to tell her about that fear? I'm afraid to tell you about how I actually feel. And we kind of back it up. It's like, okay, maybe not that deep. Maybe we can go maybe a little later back. Can you just tell them about the fear? And my goodness, those are the change moments where people locate that fear, that vulnerability. Somebody asked in the chat, I saw it come up, how can the defensive be vulnerable? You know, we'll take that one for example. The
Oh, I
fear
love that. Yeah.
of not being good enough. The thing you just told me, Ricky.
Oh, I know. I was thinking of my dishes thing as soon as you said that. If I'm standing there in front of a mass of dishes, and instead of being defensive and saying, "Well, I was really busy today, that's why I didn't do the dishes," if I said, "Man, just so you know that sometimes when the dishes get brought up, I'm terrified that you're going to see me as a cruddy partner," I guarantee he'd probably just hug me if I said that, you know?
So different. That is so different. And that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of stuff that we would pass, you know, in that setting. And I would love that, you know, if people start, you know, passing those little little pieces of vulnerability right there in real life. And that's what I
Yeah.
try to help my couples to accomplish. And I love the example, you standing in the kitchen, letting go of the defensiveness, turning off the PR campaign and
Yeah.
saying, you know what? I'm just so freaking scared that I'm not enough for you or that you're going to leave me. It's like,
Yeah, that's big, isn't it? I feel
that's a
it right
different thing.
now. He's not
Yeah.
even here, and I'm like, I should say that to him.
You can go find him right after this
I
and just
know, I
like,
know. Let's talk about the dishes.
yeah.
Yeah.
So somebody did also say like, oh, I wish this was recorded. Well, good news, this is going to be aired on the Art of Healing podcast. Once we're done, it'll probably be like a couple weeks after or so. So if you haven't tuned into the podcast, just go check it out
Yeah.
there and you'll be able to find this
I
conversation again.
think we can save it too, like post it to our
Yeah.
pages.
Yeah,
So we can
we
try.
can. So yeah, definitely. So, okay, should we grab maybe one more? We're getting close to our time. How are you doing on
Oh,
time?
are we already? Wow, this was fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we have about maybe like 10, 15 minutes left. You want to pick the next one?
I have a good one. We'll see. You can veto it if you want.
Okay, I'm ready.
This person asked, why do avoidants have a hard time saying I love you? Think that's a really good one. I mean, and it's not just avoidance. I think a lot of people have a really hard time saying I love you. I know I tend to be slower than the majority, I think, just based on my own fears. And it wasn't that long ago that I was divorced, so that can make you a little gun shy to throw those words at another person, you know?
For sure. Yeah, the thing, I feel like there's so many reasons why that could be. I think specifically about kind of we're thinking classic like avoidant attachment upbringing, like what things go into that and why it might make saying I love you hard. I think if you grew up in a home where real emotion was either punished or maybe laughed at or just kind of avoided, like if somebody said I love you growing up in your home and it's like, oh, don't do that, that's kind of weird, right? Or if it was like, hey, you know, you're sad or you're feeling something big, it's like go to your room until you can stop crying kind of thing. It's like, well, vulnerability and emotion and like all of that emoting wasn't okay. It wasn't good. So you got wired into your nervous system that says, don't do that. Because the way you actually get love, the way you stay safe, is you avoid all of it. And that way you're acceptable. You're enough. You can come out and hang out with the family if you're not crying, if you're not being emotional, if you don't say that I love you junk, because that's kind of weird. Those
I
are the
know.
rules that people grew up with. It's like, of course they're not going to say I love you. They can learn, but
They can learn. They
yeah.
can learn. I read something really interesting the other day too, that people with more of an avoidant attachment tend to be a little more distrustful of words too. They're more comfortable with affection as it's displayed because that's very concrete. If someone's doing something for you, they can see that, they can put their hands on that, you know? But words are a little more slippery and they can be thrown out without meaning behind them.
Yes.
So for avoidant attachers, sometimes they don't trust words either. So you saying, but I love you, don't you love me? You know, they're like, well, what words, right?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with that? I
Yeah.
want to see action. Action is more important. Don't I show you that I care about you?
Yeah.
They might say something like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. And I think it's important to kind of tune into that and go, well, okay, maybe they do show me that they love me. Maybe I'm not giving that as much credit, or I'm not putting a magnifying glass on that and going, hey, look at that. I'm loved. That's pretty cool. Because all I'm doing is focusing on the fact that they never tell me that they love me. And it's like, well, maybe they do. And they're just not saying it verbally, but they do it in another way. And if you heighten that, you lean into that, that's also going to be meaningful to them. It's like, ooh, okay, hold on. I'm about to. So the I just
Hit
got this
something good.
thought and it just kind of hit my brain. So the avoidant type, the number one pain and complaint that I keep hearing over and over is that I'm not enough. I can never do enough. I can never fulfill. I'm gonna say her because that's usually how I hear it. Her needs, and that's always the complaint. But my goodness, what if they're showing you love in a way that's harder for you to recognize because you want it in this one way and you're just ignoring it. You're not seeing it. You're not seeing it. And what's the message they keep getting? I'm not enough. I'm not doing it right. I can't get it right. She tells me how I'm wrong, but doesn't she see these other ways? And it's, you know, it's not to say that people shouldn't try to learn each other's, right?
They
I'm not
absolutely
a full
should,
pass,
right?
But
I think part of knowing someone and loving them for who they are is also recognizing their strengths and recognizing how they just show love without even trying. Because I think everybody has ways that they kind of default to, that if you want to see them as who they really are, it really behooves you to pay attention to the natural ways that they show love.
Yes.
Because those are the easy ways that they show love that, yeah, like you said before, you might be missing. It's one of the reasons too that I love the love languages so much. I know that love languages aren't science. I know that. Please, nobody say it in the comments. But I do think that it's a really wonderful way to get us thinking about how do I express love? How does my partner express love? Because I know that I personally was missing a ton of that when I wasn't paying attention. I'm a words person. So I'm definitely someone who wants to hear my partner say, "You're wonderful and I love you." I am not an acts of service person. So my partner's gonna be making me a beautiful gourmet sandwich, and I'm gonna go, "Thank you for the sandwich," and feel absolutely no love from that, right? And so I've really had to train myself to pay attention to the sandwiches and them putting gas in my car. You know, things that before didn't feel as big as "I love you," but for my partner, were absolutely every bit as big.
I love this. I almost want to make like a t-shirt or a bumper sticker that says, "Pay attention to the sandwiches."
Yeah. Well, it's true. All you words folks out there, words in touch, that's me. And I miss all the sandwiches. I miss all the quality time because I'm looking for "I love you." I'm looking for a hug.
Yeah.
And I miss all the other stuff if I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard, right? It's like, if I don't speak that language, it's harder for me to understand it.
And it's harder to adapt to it too, right? My own partner is not a words person. So for him to learn to say "I love you" when he's feeling that, instead of just going and making a sandwich for me, that was rough. But he does it. He does it. He didn't do it at first. Both of us had to sit down. We took the test together. That was fun. And when we saw each other's scores, we're like, "Whoa, we've both got some really big stuff to work on in learning the other person's language," because we wanted to do that for each other. And we're still trying. We're 4 years in and we're still trying to speak each other's language, but it's something we work on every day.
Yes, yes. And that's also cool too, is that like there is some element of I don't know if it's called like a struggle, but I guess I'll call it that, where it's like we struggle for love, and it's a good one though.
I
it's like one that's worthy, you
yeah,
know?
I like it. I don't know. I was an English major originally, so I really feel like there's something really poetic about finding somebody who's very different from you and learning their language for them. It's different from if I was with somebody who was all "I love yous" and hugs. I mean, how easy would that be, right? I mean, like, this is more of a challenge. And so, yeah, there's a lot of satisfaction in when I make him a sandwich. Don't even get me started, Trevor. His eyes light up and there's so much accomplishment. I'm like, "I did it. I'm speaking a foreign language."
It could be like the worst sandwich on the planet. He would just be.
Sometimes it is. I'm a terrible cook. Sometimes it is. But it doesn't matter. It's not about the sandwich. It's not about the quality of the sandwich. It's about the fact that it exists and I did it and I put love into it, even though all the ingredients are wrong. You know, he appreciates it.
Yes. Yes. I love this. Well, Ricky, it has been such a phenomenal conversation. Every time we do this, I'm like, why don't we do this
I know.
More often?
We should do this more. We haven't spoken in forever. Let's do this again.
Yes, let's definitely do it. So at this point, I want to give people who are like, "Hey, this is good. I want more. I need something else." I want to first turn them to the resources that you provide, and then I want to tell them about some of the things that I think can be helpful, because I'm still seeing questions come in that are unanswered because we just don't have the time for it. And I want to point them in directions that say, listen, there's more to this. There's more opportunities that you can take advantage of. So tell us a little bit about what resources you provide and kind of for what type of person or what type of struggle that would be a best.
My best and biggest thing is my book, The Anxious Hearts Guide. And I wrote it for anxious attachers who are kind of at the beginning of their journey. This is if you don't know much about anxious attachment, if you're newly single. It works well for people in a relationship too, but The Anxious Hearts Guide is it's a collection of all the things that I learned and the things that I did to help me personally with my anxious attachment. I also have a 21-day challenge for anxious attachers, and it's a shorter book, but it's if you want to tackle one aspect of anxious attachment every single day for 3 weeks. So that can be kind of fun too. Yeah, and the last one would be my Patreon, where every month I write like a 7-page article for folks who are in an anxious avoidant relationship.
I love that. Those are phenomenal resources.
The link in my bio has all those things.
So perfect.
If you're looking for them.
Yeah. And if you're listening somewhere like on Spotify or Apple Podcast, when this gets posted, all those links are going to be in the description.
Awesome. Thanks, Trevor.
What about you?
What do you offer?
Yeah. So I'm working on an amazing project that I'm super excited about. There's kind of two things I'll mention. The first one is, I won't tell you about my really cool project until the end, but the first one is something that's been out for a time. It's called The Connection Course, and it is a guided, basically everything that we're talking about, really deeply understanding the anxious avoidant dance, to really get clear on that dance in your own relationship, know where it's at. It gives you so much power to break that cycle, to break that dance. And that's kind of the second half of that program called The Connection Course. Again, it's in my bio. It helps you to know, okay, how do I approach this now? I have the good information. I understand myself, my partner, our dance. How do I get out of this? How do I approach my avoidant partner? What language can I use? What things am I doing that are destructive? So it helps break down all of those patterns and gets you out of it. You can do it as a couple or you can do it individually. I built it so that it could benefit like an individual, because I know that not always people are bought into doing things together.
Yeah.
And then the second one is just called the Anxious Lovers Club. Really fun, and it's going to be coming out probably not till like summer, just because it's going to be really, really good. I'm consulting with some of the world's honestly the best therapists around in attachment theory. We're bringing really amazing interventions that we use with people who are looking to heal anxious attachment, getting out of anxious patterns, finding healing, and it's guided exercises to actually create new feelings and new experiences that can create sustainable change moving forward. So the people pleasers, the anxious attachers, and the ones who maybe don't have so many boundaries in their life.
Yeah.
It's for those people. So
it'll be a course in the summer. That's what you're saying.
So it's going to be like it'll be a mixture of live calls
with
some kind of like video content and some like journal exercises and there are other like interventions to do on your own at home as well.
Love it.
Which on the back end, we're probably also going to create like some mini like coaching groups and things like that. We haven't decided exactly what that looks like, but if you want to be in on all of it, again, link in my bio or in the description of this podcast, you'll find the wait list so that when it goes live, you can be notified that that's happening.
Yeah, cool. Very cool.
Yes.
That sounds fun.
Ricky, thank you so much for joining me again. It's really awesome. I look forward to jumping on your podcast when you start having guests.
Yeah, please. You're one of the very first people I would want to have on. So yep.
I appreciate it. Okay, well, you have a wonderful night.
You too. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye. You.